Welcome to the I'm All Over the Place podcast. My name is Dara Star Tucker, and I'm glad to be with you once again to bring you another episode from my KJLH radio show. Today, I'm going to be talking about an extremely important topic, and that is voting rights. I'm kind of getting into the nitty-gritty of how voting rights, particularly for Black and Brown people, for young people, how those rights are being challenged right now and what we can do about it. I want to let you all know about some of the ways that you can support the work that I'm doing before we get to the episode. If you visit my TikTok or my Instagram, you will see a link in my bio. That'll take you to my LinkedIn, which will show you all of the ways that you can support me. You can join my Patreon there. In case you don't know what a Patreon is, that's sort of built off of the old model of philanthropy and artistic sponsorship. So the idea is that people who want to support the arts and artists, they do that by sending monthly support, which is a really cool way that you can support not only the work that I do, but other artists and creators that you appreciate. Most of them probably have a Patreon. So if you're wondering if there's a way that you can give back or make our lives easier, that is one really easy way that you can do that. Join the Patreon. And I'll put little nuggets in there every once in a while. I'm not terribly active in the Patreon, but every once in a while, I will put some exclusive stuff in there. I recently put a concert that I did for the Nashville Jazz Workshop. It was a tribute to Nancy Wilson, and I've talked about that here on the podcast. Well, that full concert that I did in Nashville in tribute to Nancy Wilson is on the Patreon. That is an exclusive thing that is offered just for my patrons. So I'll provide little Easter eggs like that from time to time, and then I do some blogging over there, just letting people inside my process, letting them know what the life of a creator is like. If you appreciate having those types of insights, you might appreciate being a part of the Patreon. So you can find me there at patreon.com/DaraStarTucker. I'm also working on building up my email list. I used to be great about this early on in my music career. I would bring my email sign-up sheet. I was so professional with it. And now in the age of social media, we have completely forgotten about email lists. But it's really important for us to remember that our email list, that's really the only thing that sort of belongs to us as creators. If any of these social media platforms decide to shut down, if any of them decide to start mucking around with our followers, which they do from time to time, or if they just decide to stop prioritizing our content, to stop delivering that to you, and I've seen a lot of throttling of my views lately, well, then we as creators are totally disconnected from our audiences. And I don't want that. And if you don't want that, then I would suggest signing up for my email list. And you can do that very easily by going to the link in my bio, either on Instagram or on TikTok. And there's a link there to my Substack, which is how I stay in contact with my audience. I don't send emails very often, maybe once every other month, kind of letting you know where I'm going to be, what I'm up to. But I really appreciate those who sign up for my email list. I'm told by some marketing experts that people who sign up for email lists, those are your diehard people. Those are the ones who are going to stick around. So I hope that's you. Go to the link in my bio, sign up for my email list. Maybe once every couple months, you'll get a correspondence from me. I will never, ever, ever sell your information, and I certainly will not be spamming you. And then lastly, I always forget to mention this, but I have a merch store. The Breakdown has a merch store. So again, that link is in my bio. Or you can find my merch on my website at darastartucker.com. That's Dara with one R and Star with two. You can find the merch store that way. I have t-shirts, mugs, tumblers, all kinds of cool things to help you rep the Breakdown. And as I've said before, if you get your Breakdown merch and you want to show that off, put up a post and I will absolutely share that. I love to see those types of posts. So without further ado, I'm going to share this very important episode on the attack on voting rights. If you're appreciating these episodes of The Breakdown on KJLH, reach out and let me know. Rate the I'm All Over the Place podcast on whatever platform you use. Give us a review if you're able. That helps us to rank higher in the searches. I really appreciate all the support that you all have provided, and I'm excited to share this episode with you on voting rights. Thanks so much for listening. Well, hi there, folks. I'm Dara Star Tucker, and this is The Breakdown. Thank you for joining me for this very important episode of The Breakdown. I'm hoping with each successive week, we can dive deeper into the issues that matter and fortify ourselves against the forces that would oppose our collective liberation. The fact that you're tuned in to The Breakdown, it lets me know that our goals are aligned in that. And we're going to work on turning the light on for more and more folks and bringing them into the fold. I want to let you know how you can find me if you want to stay connected with me. You can look for me on the KJLH Instagram page. You can find them at Radio Free KJLH on Instagram. And you can also follow me on my personal Instagram page. That's Dara Tucker B. And on all other platforms, I'm at Dara Star Tucker. That's Dara with one R and Star with two. Well, we're going to talk about voting rights today, and I'll start this week's show by pulling back the curtain just a little bit on my life. As many of you know, I'm a content creator, and I gained a following on TikTok during the pandemic and in subsequent years from talking about race, culture, entertainment history, and how those things can intersect and influence each other. That's my favorite kind of content to do. I have a series called The Breakdown Online, where I take a subject that I'm interested in and I take you through the narrative around that topic, kind of like a mini documentary. And I do this on my socials. I also talk about politics and I talk about religion, pretty much anything that suits my fancy. And that's the beauty of the online world. You don't have a boss and you live and die by what you choose to share. It's very simple. It's one of the things that I love about being a content creator. But having a larger platform has also opened up the opportunity for me to move into the political commentary space. And I've done a lot of that since I started down this path back in 2020. And I'm sure we all remember 2020 was a very turbulent year. Not only were we dealing with the pandemic, but we also had the George Floyd killing, the Breonna Taylor murder. You had all of that happening against the backdrop of election season, of course. And it was a crazy election season. And I'm sure we're getting ready to experience that all over again. I hate to say it. But for the majority of that year, I really didn't have a public voice. And now I do. Many of you know that I'm a singer as well. I've been doing lots of touring lately, and that was my primary involvement before the pandemic started. And of course, the pandemic starting, it brought all of that to a halt for all musicians and singers who were touring, getting out on the road. We all had to stop what we were doing. So I found myself indoors, and then the world, of course, starts going topsy-turvy. And I remember getting to the point where I felt like there was a cauldron that was just bubbling up inside of me. I had so much to say about what was going on in the world. And I remember turning to the person that I was with and saying, I feel like I am supposed to speak to an audience. My audience is out there and I don't know how to connect with them. There are people who are waiting to hear what I have to say, but I cannot figure out how that connection is supposed to happen. And then I turned to that person. I said, but you know what? I am going to figure it out. I'm going to figure this out. And it wasn't long after that that I started working on upgrading my film equipment. I've been kind of an amateur documentarian for a while. During my time in Nashville, I would do kind of video profiles of musician friends of mine. So I created a TikTok profile and I just started speaking up about the issues that were important to me. And at first, it was really comforting because no one that I knew was on that platform. So I could kind of say what I wanted to with a bit of anonymity. No family was over there. No friends were over there at the time. This is early 2020. And I just started working it out slowly but surely, figuring out what it was that I wanted to say and finding my audience little bit by little bit. And slowly but surely, over the years, I have found a group of like-minded people, not only on TikTok, but on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, over a million people at this point that I've been able to connect with. So many opportunities have opened up because I decided to open my mouth and speak what was in my heart. And I've gotten to the point in my life and career where I feel like I'm really starting to find my people. So if you are a regular listener of The Breakdown, you are indeed my people, and I'm so glad to be connected with you. And I'm so glad to be talking about such an important subject today, voting rights. So recently I attended a sort of voter activation event that was very encouraging and it was really enlightening. And there were just a bunch of us content creators that got together to talk about the challenges of discussing the upcoming election. And there were a couple of things that stood out to me. Number one, people care about the issues that directly affect them. You can talk about our civic duty all you want. You can focus on things that seem very far away to people, and you're not going to connect with folks like you will just talking about the things that affect their everyday life. And the other thing that struck me is how many people at this gathering, many of them in the Gen Z demographic, really understood what's at stake this election season. Many of them understand that democracy itself is on the ballot in 2024. And you've probably heard that a lot already. If not, you will be hearing that a lot this year because it's absolutely true. Some people like to call that a scare tactic. It is not a scare tactic. For those who are truly paying attention, we know what's at stake. And that's nothing to be alarmed by. It just means we have to stay vigilant. That's why I've started talking about these topics months in advance of the election. We don't need to be caught unawares come October or November. Suddenly we're scrambling and we're trying to figure out what we need to be focused on. There's too much at stake for that. And I've often said with the violence happening in Gaza, the assault on the Palestinian people, in what used to be an ordinary election season, if Biden were running up against someone like a McCain or a Romney, and folks thought that they might see an improvement in our foreign policy by voting for someone else, I'm not saying I would agree with voting for them, but I might be willing to show a little deference. But this is just not a normal election season. There is nothing normal about Trump and his cult. There just isn't. This is not politics as usual. So holding space for the fact that I do not agree with the politics of the United States or Israel in Gaza, I'm also acutely aware that we're dealing with the rising threat of neo-fascism here on the home front. Those two things can be true at the same time. And one of the ways that our democracy continues to be challenged is through the attack on voting rights. That is an earmark of this neo-fascist influence that I've been talking about. So it's important to remember that not only is voting a staple of any healthy democracy, but voting is a constitutionally guaranteed right in the United States. You know how all those Second Amendment folks will flaunt their guns even after national tragedies, and they'll dare anyone to suggest that we should have common sense gun laws in this country because the right to bear arms is constitutionally protected? Well, we should feel just as emboldened knowing that our right to vote is protected by the Constitution of the United States. Folks live and die by the Constitution in the United States like it's holy scripture. Okay, let's hold them to that. But there has not been a time when that right, that constitutionally protected right, has not been under severe threat, particularly for groups that don't serve the agenda of those in power. I was talking to someone at this voter activation event that I attended, and they're doing a lot of outreach to people of color and the LGBTQ community, younger voters, and they said they really don't have the chance to work with a lot of conservative groups, unfortunately, because those folks don't really seem interested in reaching those groups. For them, it's just better if we stay home, or worse yet, if they can create barriers to our getting out to the polls. And this is nothing new. It's just sad that it's still the case in 2024. So we should not be surprised that these efforts to suppress the votes of certain demographics will be in full force in 2024. So to start getting out ahead of that, we should all be checking up on our voter registration. Check up on your voter registration. You can do that very easily at the nonprofit site vote.org. That's a good place to start. Start getting your ducks in a row now so you're not in a scramble this fall. But what we're already dealing with this election season in terms of voter suppression, it's nothing new. This election, of course, will be a straight up repeat of 2020. We all know that. With some important adjustments by both parties, I'm sure. You may remember that there were a lot of efforts at voter suppression 4 years ago, just as there are now. They were shutting down polling places. There were voter roll purges. Stacey Abrams was really involved in the fight to confront that in the state of Georgia. There was even a push by Trump to work with the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. I don't know if you all remember this, to slow down the mail delivery because they knew that during the pandemic, Democrats were pushing their constituents to vote by mail. And Trump was encouraging his supporters to show up in person. And Trump told his supporters, do not vote by mail. And then he started calling mail-in ballots into question. So that was a huge source of consternation for a lot of his supporters. They experienced a false red wave is what they called it, because their votes were counted first on election night. And then all of the mail-in ballots, which were largely blue, were counted last. So Trump supporters went to sleep thinking that he had this huge lead, and then they woke up to find a different story. And he convinced them that there must be foul play afoot. So after November, all the election denialism started and the election results were challenged in 61 court cases, all of which Trump lost, of course. And this was all a testament to how far he would go to disenfranchise voters because he has no respect for democracy. Even now, even after all that we have been through with January 6th, with all the court cases that he's now embroiled in, with the number of co-conspirators and insurrectionists that have been arrested, tried, convicted, jailed, he is not done attempting to disenfranchise anyone who doesn't bow to his will. And I will say it again and again until people listen. Trump is not a fan of democracy. And that should be concerning to all of us, even if you agree with his point of view. The fact that he is not very much interested in the democratic process and would prefer to be an authoritarian dictator, that should concern everyone. Now, I want to play for you a brief breakdown that I did on the history of voting rights, just a quick little explainer that contains a lot of essential information on the fraught history that Black voters have had with this constitutionally protected right of voting. And I think a lot of these folks who are currently participating in these efforts to disenfranchise Black and Brown voters would do well to study this history. I'll play part one for you of my voting rights explainer, and then I'm going to come back and talk about the current voter roll purges that are happening in Georgia and elsewhere. But first, let's listen to this quick explainer on the history of voter disenfranchisement in the United States.
One of the most important things that King and other civil rights activists were fighting for was equal access to the voting ballot. This is a constitutional right in the United States, not a privilege, but a right granted by the Constitution to U.S. citizens. But there hasn't been a time in our nation's history where those in power haven't tried to restrict this right to only those that they deemed worthy of it. I'm Dara Starr Tucker, and this is The Breakdown. Early in our nation's history, only wealthy landowners could vote. After that, rights were extended to all white men. After slavery was abolished, Black men technically had the right to vote after the passage of the 15th Amendment. But that's when all the trouble started. Local districts started enacting things like poll taxes, literacy tests, and using voter intimidation to prevent formerly enslaved men from voting. With poor white citizens who couldn't pass the literacy test, they created so-called grandfather clauses, which meant that you could automatically vote if your grandfather had voted. Obviously, if your grandfather was enslaved, you didn't qualify. Eventually, many states began passing laws that took away a person's right to vote if they were convicted of a felony. This after many southern states enacted what were known as Black Codes, a group of laws that governed Black behavior and made certain things illegal for Black people only. After this, prisons began to fill up with young Black men who were permanently ineligible to vote. Because of these Jim Crow era restrictions, by 1940, only 3% of southern Black Americans were registered to vote. Civil rights activists worked long and hard to enact change. Many were beaten, and some even lost their lives. When the nation watched the future Congressman John Lewis and others be brutalized by police on national television when they attempted to participate in a voting rights march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, the nation finally found the will to pass sweeping voting rights legislation. There was a constitutional amendment to ban poll taxes in 1964, and President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Bill of 1965, which ended many efforts to disenfranchise Black and Brown voters. One of the key components to the new law said that states who had the worst records of voter suppression had to have pre-clearance by the federal government before enacting any new voter restrictions. By the end of 1965, 250,000 new Black voters had been registered. The Voting Rights Act was reauthorized and strengthened by multiple presidents over the next 40 years. So why are we now experiencing an attempt at the greatest contraction of voting rights since the end of Reconstruction and the beginning of Jim Crow? I'll talk about that in part two.
So that's just the quick and dirty synopsis of the history of Black folks in this country fighting their way to the polls. I always say that voting is the very least that we can do to participate in the democratic process. Voting is not everything. It is not the entire democratic process. Grassroots organizing and lobbying, even in non-election years, that's also a part of the backbone of democracy. But for the average citizen, voting is the primary way in which we engage with democracy. And when we study that history and continue to be mindful of the sacrifices that were made to ensure that we had the vote, we'll keep that top of mind. And as the saying goes, if voting weren't important, if voting didn't matter, folks would not be trying so hard to keep you from doing it. And I want to point to a sort of case study out of Georgia that speaks to that very point. Trump still somehow has many of his supporters convinced that he did not get a fair shake in the last election. Even in a state like Georgia, where there were three recounts to the election results, where Trump is now about to stand trial for attempting to get the Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, to find him 11,000 votes when he had clearly lost the election. So in Georgia, along with many other states, there are popping up these grassroots organizations, which I suspect are tied to some dark money groups, that are now sponsoring campaigns to enact mass voter roll purges. They are already underway. They're basically recruiting a bunch of Trump supporters who are convinced that the election was stolen from him, despite all of the recounts, to spend hours and hours a week at the county election board scanning voter rolls and looking for discrepancies, inconsistencies, duplicates, whatever they can find, to challenge the names that appear on the rolls from specific districts. And of course, this is happening in all the battleground states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada. And surprise, surprise, their efforts are having the biggest impact on Black and brown people and on younger voters. So basically, they changed the rules down in Georgia, where any citizen can make an unlimited number of voter roll challenges. Now they can bring in all these retired and semi-retired conservative voters to literally just scan voter rolls for hours and hours a day. And that's what they are doing. Each of these citizen activists makes hundreds, sometimes thousands of voter challenges. There have been 80,000 voter roll challenges so far. And they have been successful at purging about 15% of the names that they have brought into question off of the rolls. Because people don't generally show up to the election board to defend their registration, which is what they have to do. People have jobs, unlike a lot of these folks. So they've purged about 12,000 people from the rolls in Georgia, mostly in Democratic counties. Let's remember that the election was won by only a little bit over 11,000 votes in the state of Georgia last time. If you'll remember, Brad Raffensperger recorded the call where Trump asked him to find those 11,000 voters. So now instead of finding 11,000 more Trumpists, they've eliminated 12,000 people that are very unlikely to be Trumpists. So same difference. And now there's also a Republican activist that's created AI-based software that's going to allow him to do mass scans of these voter rolls so that he can quickly identify voters who supposedly should be purged from the rolls. And this is all being done in the name of preventing election fraud, of course, which by every measure of information gathering that's available to us has been shown not to exist. The majority of what they're finding are typos, they're finding clerical errors, or honest mistakes, frankly, but that doesn't matter to them. It's a numbers game. These people claim to be patriots who are just interested in free and fair elections, when in my estimation, they're really creating solutions that are in search of a problem. But as I said, this is just the continuation of an effort that has been underway since the founding of this country to shut a large part of the electorate out of the democratic process. Now, I want to play part two for you of the breakdown series that I did on voting rights. Part two focuses on the passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965 and the challenges to that act that have effectively made the most important part of the act unenforceable. So let's listen to part two, and I'm going to come back to talk about solutions.
Black people had achieved an historic victory in 1965, something that Martin Luther King Jr. and many other civil rights activists had sacrificed so much for, a sweeping voting rights law that protected the right to vote for many people that had been shut out of the voting process for far too long. I'm Dara Starr Tucker, and this is The Breakdown. In 2010, conservative political operative Edward Blum helped Shelby County, Alabama, sue the federal government, alleging that part of the Voting Rights Act was unconstitutional. Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act required states with a history of disenfranchising Black and brown voters to get pre-clearance from the federal government before they could create any new voting laws that might harm minority voters. This case made it all the way to the Supreme Court in 2013. The Supreme Court didn't rule that the law was unconstitutional, but they did rule that the formula that was used to calculate which states were the most problematic was outdated. So that very important part of the law is now unenforceable. After that happened, state and local lawmakers across the country had a field day with new restrictive laws around voting. They began shutting down polling locations in counties with high Black and brown populations. Black and Latino voters now wait an average of 45% longer to vote than whites do. They started creating stricter voter ID laws, restricting early voting and voting by mail. These restrictions are always built on scare tactics around voter fraud. A couple of credible studies were done by independent organizations. The Brennan Center reviewed elections across 42 jurisdictions in California, New Hampshire, and Virginia. They determined that there were about 30 incidents of suspected non-citizen votes out of 23 million. That's 0.0001% of the votes reviewed. Loyola Law School professor Justin Levitt conducted a study of in-person voter impersonation from 2000 to 2014. He found 35 credible allegations out of 800 million votes cast. the equivalent of a bee fart in a windstorm. After the many false allegations of voter fraud in 2020, 48 states introduced at least 389 restrictive voting bills, and 19 states passed 34 laws in 2021 that made it harder to vote, according to the Brennan Center for Justice, mostly in Republican-controlled states. Voter restrictions have always had the greatest impact on Black and brown communities, and on younger people. Politicians know this. Beware of anyone who works this hard to restrict you from exercising your most sacred right as a citizen of a democracy, the constitutionally protected right to vote.
So what's our answer to all this? We know that there are forces out there that are seeking to shut us out of one of the most important parts of the democratic process. And how do we present a counter to that? How do we make sure that our rights are protected? We do it by getting out ahead of these nefarious efforts to undermine our participation in the election. We get out ahead of it by going to a site like vote.org and doing a quick check just to see if our name is still on the voter roll. That's easy enough, right? And if you've had a change of address, if you've moved since the last election, like I have, you may have to request a paper ballot. You may need to acquire a new license that has your correct address on it, like I'm having to do. These are things that take time. And like a lot of you, I have a few things that I need to get in order to make sure that I'm ready to show up at the polls with no issues. So if your county allows mail-in voting, make sure that you request those ballots in plenty of time. And a site like vote.org has tons of resources for you to understand the landscape in your particular county and even ways for you to get a good overview of the candidates in your local elections so that you have a lay of the land and you don't feel like you're just checking off random boxes. We all know how that feels, and it doesn't feel good. So there's really no excuse this early on. That's why we're talking about voting now. We have a long way to go this election season. There will be many, many more efforts to remove Black and brown voters from rolls all over the country. And there are going to be efforts to change the rules like there were in the 2020 election. There'll be more accusations of fraud. There will be voter intimidation. I think we can count on that. But our ancestors knew how to get through these challenges. They taught us a lot of lessons in perseverance through persecution, if we're listening. And let's not forget, even if you're not excited about the people at the top of the ticket, there are down ballot folks that need your support. So they're always worth showing up for. Let's not forget, state senates are the ones that decide the election rules. Your local election board is very important as well. You should be thinking about races like the school board, like the library board. Some of us need to be making plans to run for some of these offices in the next election, 2026 and 2028. It should not just be the folks with nothing but time on their hands who are sitting around watching Fox News all day and running for these local offices. Remember that the folks who are trying to shut you out of the voting process are only going to be successful in their bid to do that if you're unplugged and you're not paying attention. So you're checking that voter registration once a month, making sure that everything is in order. We're going to get through this topsy-turvy election year together, and we are going to do it triumphantly. I want to thank you all for listening to this week's episode of The Breakdown on Voting Rights. Remember, you can find me on the KJLH Instagram page. They're located at Radio Free KJLH. I'm at Dara Tucker B on Instagram and at Dara Star Tucker everywhere else. Dara with one R, Star with two. If you've missed any episodes of The Breakdown, you can find them on the KJLH website at kjlhradio.com or on the KJLH app, which is available on iPhone or Android. If you missed last week's episode on DEI, I would highly recommend taking a listen to that. I'm really proud of that episode. There's a lot of good information there for you about a topic that is very relevant. Lots of challenges to DEI happening right now. So you can take KJLH with you wherever you go, either through the website or through the app. My name, of course, is Dara Star Tucker. I've enjoyed my time with you this week talking about the issues that matter. Let's do this again, same time, same place next week. And until then, let's learn to shout.